We go to another philosopher next, Chrysoula Andreou from the University of Utah. She co-edited The Thief of Time and contributed her own essay called Coping with Procrastination. She outlined a number of strategies for Ann Strangechamps, including one borrowed from psychology, an implementation intention.
The idea of an implementation intention is instead of having a vague goal, like I will lose weight or I will get into better shape, you come up with a way of implementing that in a kind of specific plan. And so you come up with a plan that may be something like, okay, on Monday, Wednesday, Fridays, I will walk home from work. That's sort of not just it's not a vague goal. It actually gives you a way of implementing what you want to do.
So you're sort of breaking it down into little baby steps, and your goal is no longer the great big thing. Down the line, it's very specific. My goal is to exercise 5 days a week or 3 days a week or to only have dessert on Saturdays.
Yeah, so the two features are it's not vague, it's specific. And also, it, like you said, it kind of breaks it down into a certain series of steps. So it's not just something in the distance where there's no particular thing that you need to be doing at any particular time to achieve it. It's like, I want this vague goal, this big thing, and here's the way I'm going to achieve it. And once you've set out an implementation, there is a sense in which it's not vague anymore. If the way you're planning on doing it is this way, and yet you're not sticking to that, there is a psychological sort of dissonance or a kind of problem that occurs there. And it actually does motivate people. It does make a difference.
Well, my experience as a lifelong procrastinator, frankly, is that I'm incredibly wily at overcoming all sorts of strategies. So what are the negative consequences to this particular strategy?
In this case, actually, one of the problems with the strategy is not so much that you're able to find exceptions, although that's a problem with some strategies, that you kind of look for creative ways of kind of getting out of the, it wasn't supposed to apply in this type of circumstance, in this type of circumstance, I can deviate in this way. In this case, one of the problems is actually, because it's so specific and clearly defined, if you do lapse, it often reinforces the feeling that you're not capable of achieving this goal. So it lowers your feeling of efficacy. And one lapse makes it more likely that you'll actually just give up altogether. So there's the idea that a bright line is good because it helps kind of guide you and be more specific. But if you lapse, it's more easy to just say, oh, forget it, this is too hard, there's no way. And there is some studies in relation to addiction that suggest that, if you have a first lapse, oftentimes you'll just take that kind of resigned attitude of like, oh, forget it, this is just too hard.
Right, that one drink and you decide, well, that's it, I might as well have the whole bottle.
Right, exactly. Because it just sort of reinforces the idea, like, I don't really have the self-control to achieve this goal.
Now, another thing people do is set it up so that there are costs to procrastinating. I can tell you from personal experience, there are an awful lot of journalists who would never write a word if it weren't for their editor's deadlines. That's actually a fairly effective strategy, isn't it?
Yes, I think it is effective for a lot of things. But there are certain areas in your life where external constraints aren't as easy to implement, either because they kind of invade your privacy too much, or there are no kind of socially available kind of prefabricated devices that you could just rely on. So you have to kind of construct a device yourself, somehow get other people involved in monitoring you and stuff.
Oh, this is the thing. If you want to take up running, do it with a friend. When your friend is pounding on your door at 6 a.m, you're going to go ahead and put on your running shoes.
Oh, yeah. And then in that case, your friend really is your best friend because they're a cheap pre-commitment device. If they are there at 6 a.m. pounding on your door, great. That's an external incentive that's kind of available to you. No massive financial cost or invasion of privacy. So I would say in that context, you would gravitate towards something like that and it would probably work quite well. I mean, some people might object that too much reliance on external kind of incentives is actually going to kind of weaken your self-control. And so when that you actually need it in some cases, you haven't sort of strengthened it like a muscle where you can actually employ it. You're relying too much on external constraints. But I would say that in some areas of your life, they're just so convenient and so such a reasonable solution. The cost is not too great. They're readily accessible that it does make sense to use those.
Another strategy you tend to see suggested is, well, it's kind of a variation on how we potty train children. You set up your own system of rewards. So something, more sophisticated than a sticker chart, but along the same lines. Does that work?
Yeah. Part of the reason I think that can work, and that's the strategy I call leveraging control, and that's the strategy that I discuss because I don't think it's been as extensively studied in the literature on procrastination. But at least with respect to adults, I think there is some reason to believe it's not so much that either you're a procrastinator or not, or either you have good self-control or you have poor self-control. It's actually something that varies by domain in your life, by area. And so you can have a lot of, as a professor, you're used to hearing other professors say, and sometimes complaining yourself, oh, these students are such procrastinators. They know they need to do this, but they always just put it off till the last minute. And then you find out sometimes, well, in some cases, they're not procrastinators at all. They're, you know, really disciplined when it comes to their weight training regimen or something else. And I think that's true for all of us, is that there are certain areas in our lives that either through habit or for some other reason, we've cultivated more self-control. And I think we can use those areas to help us gain self-control in other areas by something like a reward system. So if I have a lot of self-control when it comes to, let's say, spending money, I can use that to reward myself for, let's say, sticking to an exercise program. And I know that I will not reward myself unless I've earned it, because I have a lot of self-control with respect to that area of my life. And so can add a little bit of extra incentive. And sometimes a little bit of extra incentive is all you need, because if procrastination sometimes functions as a free rider problem, where part of the reason you put off the thing is because you think it's negligible, it's not going to have a big impact one way or the other. Once you add a non-negligible impact that you yourself are going to enforce, you might be more motivated to stick with the original plan that you came up with. It might add just enough kind of impact to motivate you.
So explain how this works in practice. We were talking about exercising, for instance. So how would you use a leveraged control strategy to make yourself stick to your exercise routine?
As I said, you have to have an area of where you have decent self-control. So let's say the decent self-control is in the area of spending or spending on treats or something like that. You might tell yourself, okay, only if I exercise 3 times a week or walk home from work these 3 days, will I have earned the right to go out for a really nice dinner on Friday night. And I know, again, if I have a lot of self-control when it comes to spending money, I know that I will, you know, enforce that. I really will not provide with myself with the reward unless I have done the exercise.
Boy, this sounds really tricky, though, because self-control, I guess it's a strategy that's entirely dependent on self-control, which seems like exactly what the procrastinator has trouble with. So if somebody is already avoiding their exercise program, wouldn't they also simply be likely to avoid their penalty?
Well, that's why the strategy depends crucially on the idea that self-control varies from domain to domain. So yes, the strategy would be totally puzzling if you could just say of people, oh, this person's a procrastinator or this person has poor self-control. But if things are more subtle than that, they have a lot of self-control in some areas and poor self-control in others, then it is actually possible for them to, as I said, leverage their control from one area into another. I mean, the one reason I think the strategy has just seemed kind of puzzling or paradoxical, like it couldn't be true. But if you recognize that, you know, a problem with self-control doesn't have to be a global problem, you know, in every aspect of your life, then it's no longer puzzling. It is a possibility for you yourself to kind of intervene via your self-control in another domain.
Krasula Andreou is the co-editor of and a contributor to The Thief of Time, Philosophical Essays on Procrastination. She spoke with N. Strange Champs.